time of the whole offseason, without a doubt.
Well, Tom, did you consider going in? I mean, Tom, unfortunately, Tommy is a Eagles fan, and I kind of wondered if you thought of going in last night to see the draft.
Well, yeah, I had thought about it, but, you know, you're really here. The best place to get a feel for the whole event, you get to see the whole scale of it on your television, really get an idea of how many people are down there. I mean, it's really unparalleled. I think they said it was somewhere around 100,000 down there to see it last night, packed into the Art Museum steps and so on. So it's really unbelievable stuff.
So what do they do down there so they can see from outside what's going on?
Well, I know they have screens set up. I know if you're, you know, the farther back you are, obviously the harder it is. But it's an experience. They're calling it the NFL Draft Experience this year. You can go down. They have a little combine. The kids can simulate some of the stuff that these prospects go through, whether it's pushing the sleds, running around the dummies, doing a 40. They have all kinds of that fun stuff. All kinds of big names down there from, you know, Ron Jaworski, one of the, you know, former Philadelphia Eagle quarterback who helped bring the draft here. You know, he's definitely to thank for this. And it's just really a great time. And it's really good that Philadelphia can be seen on a large scale to the whole nation, really putting on what seems like it's been the best draft in years. And hopefully that'll mean it'll be back there next year.
Really? Now, were they in Chicago last year?
Yes, I believe last year was Chicago, and it had been New York pretty consistently for a long time before that, and then they decided to move to Chicago. They might have spent 2 years in Chicago.
And that, as I recall, was quite a production in Chicago.
Oh, they did well, but, you know, Philadelphia is special in its own right. We're, you know, probably the most rabid fan base, and I say that in the best way possible there is. And it really shines us in a better light, I feel like, as opposed to the national narrative of us being troglodytes that, you know, can't be bothered to, you know, cheer for anybody else. But, you know, it was really something else.
And I understand, actually, Giant fans and Jet fans were pleased because they didn't have that far to travel.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it was very open to everybody. It was a family experience. I mean, yes, it's predominantly green Eagles fans you see down there. It's a sea of green. But the people, you saw Cowboy fans, you saw Giant fans, you saw everybody, and everybody was accepted because, you know, we're all there, we're all appreciating it, and we're able to put it aside, you know, some of the rivalries and stuff, just to take in one of the most exciting events the NFL has to offer. We get to see some of these great athletic kids coming out, showing what they got and getting to go on the grandest stage of them all. Many of them, it's the biggest moment of their lives, and it's just great to get to be a part of it and, you know, getting some local flavor in it, if you will.
Well, one of the reasons that I asked you, no, it was more like begged you to come on today, is I'm not a big college football fan. And one of the things I noticed when we watched part of the draft with you last night is that both you and your brother really seem to know most of these top contenders. So, you know, let's talk a minute about the top first-round pick. Was that a surprise?
Well, the number one pick was not a surprise, actually, this year. This man was Myles Garrett. He's a defensive end out of Texas A&M. He's a junior. He was a three-year starter. He was really something else. At this point, he was pretty much considered the safe number one pick, I would have to say. So there wasn't a lot of shock when he was taken. I want to say Browns fans are pretty happy with it. I mean, I'm sure some may have wanted them to make the move for Mitchell Trubisky, the quarterback who actually went number two. But it's definitely the safe and smart pick at this point.
Okay. Well, our sports guy Bill Wolfson is here. And Bill, this is our special guest, Tommy Devlin.
Hey,
and
Tommy.
The reason I invited him today is that he can bring us up to speed on the draft. I don't know if you watched last night, but certainly, Tommy knows probably all the players, and so whatever questions you have, we were just starting, and we were talking about what a great thing it was to have it in Philadelphia, and Tom, Bill is also an Eagles fan.
That's good to hear.
So, you know, I was asking Tommy why he didn't go to Philadelphia, but he's really pleased that it was there, and we just started talking about the top pick last night.
Well, I didn't get a chance to watch the draft, but I did see the Eagles getting ready for it, and been all over Philadelphia TV looking at the spectacular way that they use the art museum as a backdrop for this. And the only thing I haven't seen is each draft pick running up the steps of the art museum to the Rocky theme. So it's been
well. Are they doing that?
Well, they come out on the steps. They introduce. They meet with the commissioner on the steps. But no, they're not running to the music.
Well, okay. Now the Browns. What didn't they have three?
The Browns. The Browns actually ended up picking three players in the first round.
So what do you think that's going to do for their team?
Well, you see, they're a team that at this point, I mean, rebuild is putting it lightly with them. They're in a full overhaul of that team. You know, they brought in it's a whole new regime. Led up by their executive VP of football relations, Sashi Brown. He's considered to be a very good numbers guy. Hopefully he can help turn this around. And Hugh Jackson, their new head coach, is very well respected around the league, considered to be one of the better offensive minds there is. Obviously last year he came and he only won one game, but they were allowing that. It's the start of a rebuild. They stockpiled picks. Obviously they had some extra picks from last year. The Eagles had to acquire Carson Wentz, so they had to move up to do that. That involved them moving a lot of picks to Cleveland. So Cleveland had a lot of stockpiled stuff to make moves this year.
So was there anybody that was a surprise to you as far as either being picked or not being picked?
Well, at the top of the draft, I mean, there were a lot of fireworks, to put it mildly. The Bears trading up, they actually moved up. It was very unusual. They moved up from the number three spot to the number two spot. So they slid up one spot to draft this quarterback named Mitchell Trubisky. Now, he's a guy out of UNC. He's pretty green. I want to say he's only a sophomore. He's only played 13 games, actually, I believe, in his college career.
Wow.
Which is very light for somebody to be coming in.
And especially that high.
Absolutely. And the Bears really had to give up a king's ransom to get him. They had to swap, obviously, the first-round pick. They're also giving up a third round later in the draft as well. As another third round later in the draft, and a fourth round pick.
Now,
and
did they really think that he would go number two? Because they only moved up one spot?
Yeah, it sort of seems like the 49ers may have had some misdirection. Sort of probably gave him an ultimatum saying that how bad do you want and what are you willing to give us? Because some people thought the 49ers then might make a move on a quarterback as well, but they ended up drafting Solomon Thomas, another pretty safe pick, a stud defensive end out of Stanford.
Okay.
But, yeah, Trubisky was definitely the big shocker of the draft. I mean, nobody saw that coming that early in the draft with a guy who has very little pedigree at this point. But
do you think he'll play this year?
Absolutely not. They signed Mike Glennon in the offseason to a three-year deal for starting quarterback money. He will be the quarterback this year. Trubisky's going to have to take a redshirt year. It could even be two. He has a lot to learn.
Well, I agree with that, Tom. I noticed that with Trubisky, one of the things that they showed was he did not play well out of the pocket.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, he made a lot of throwing errors.
And yeah, lots of mechanical errors.
Including play that I think started at his 1 or 2 yard line. He threw to a running back and there was an immediate safety because he just didn't have enough situational awareness yet of what the defense looked like. He was focusing on just his target and not what was around his target. And that may be something that is a teachable skill. I don't know, but they showed that, and it was pretty memorable because you don't usually see a starting college quarterback in his fourth year making that kind of a mistake. Now, we all make mistakes. We all have bad days and bad games.
But he wasn't in his fourth year, was
no,
he?
No, I think
he was only like a second year.
No, he was third year.
He didn't play much.
He didn't play much. Yeah, because he was a later starter. I definitely agree with that sentiment. He definitely seems like, yeah, it could be teachable. Some of it's something that maybe you put him with the right guys, they can impose them onto him. But it's definitely the shocker of the early draft to me.
Okay.
The interesting thing will be if they bring him along over 2 or 3 years, Can he grow? And what's the Bears' receiving core and offensive line going to look like?
Exactly. They have to look to build around him because at the moment, it would be the worst thing to do would be to throw him in there without the help he needs and stunt his growth or something like that. They have to make sure they provide him the pieces to excel and grow at the pace he needs to.
Well, and, you know, I always go back to Aaron Rodgers, as you know. But, you know, he sat for 6 years.
Yeah.
Now, you know, they were had a real dilemma because they had such a great franchise quarterback.
That's right. I thought, turning to another unusual pick, I noticed that Hassan Reddick, a senior at Temple and a defensive back, ended up going to the Arizona Cardinals. And he set records, 10.5 sacks and 22.5 tackles for losses last year for the Owls. And I was surprised to see the Arizona Cardinals take him. I thought somebody would pick him to play closer to home, like Philadelphia or Pittsburgh.
Absolutely. I was thinking the same thing, and I was kind of wondering if it would put a guy like him, who's been a local guy his whole life, actually born in New Jersey, then went to play football in Temple, if it could affect him. But what I think, what I ended up hearing this morning could really be the positive is Bruce Arians is their head coach, who actually had a tenure, a very successful tenure at Temple in the 90s, I believe it was. So
hopefully
that can be the buffer for Hassan, give him a little piece of home maybe to make him feel like he's going to be a real part of that team. But I definitely think he's a very, very talented player, a guy who's sideline to sideline all the time. I was happy to see him go, especially being a local guy.
Well, you were happy to see him go, but you probably would have rather had him go to the Eagles.
Well, he was taking the pick before the Eagles, and he was somebody on my board, but he was wouldn't have been my first choice.
So who would your first choice have been?
Well, on the offensive side of the ball, my number one choice, if available, I was pretty confident he wasn't going to be, was Christian McCaffrey, the star running back out of Stanford. He ended up getting scooped up by Carolina, I believe, at the eighth spot, and he's a really just super talented player. I mean, he takes the ball out of the backfield. He can go into the slot and catch the ball. I mean, he's a guy, you can put him, you ask him to do something, he'll do it. He can go, he can return some punts, return some kicks, so he would have been a real weapon. And on the defensive side, I actually wanted a player who ended up slipping very far in the first round due to some circumstances, both on and off the field, was Reuben Foster, a linebacker from Alabama.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
He ended up slipping all the way to the 31st spot to the 49ers, who traded back into the round to get him. He has some off-the-field issues. He had a diluted sample come from his combine urine sample, which turns some heads. And I also believe there's some thought with some GMs that he has a rotator cuff injury that may need to be addressed or may not to be in the offseason. So that's a red flag that definitely turns some people off. And I could understand the Eagles' apprehension to getting him for getting him because of that and moving and getting Derek Barnett instead.
Except that the urine was not... It was not a positive, right?
Correct. It was a diluted sample, and I don't know much about that, obviously not my field, but it's more or less they couldn't get a read on it. Something was dilute in it. He claims it was from drinking a lot of water to stay hydrated. You know, those situations are tough to get a gauge on. So he wasn't the only player, though, to have a diluted sample. I also believe Jabril Peppers also had one, a safety linebacker.
So he went very, you know, he
ended up
high.
He went in the 20s, I believe, to the Browns. So he was about where people thought he would be.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I know we had the conversation because the Packers were supposed to pick 29, and for some reason they traded. And I wonder, did they really – maybe they really didn't want Watts because now he
TJ,
was selected.
Yes, TJ Watt.
DJ.
TJ.
Right? TJ,
yes,
excuse
TJ.
Me. So were you surprised – I mean, I was surprised that they – traded unless there was something, obviously, that we didn't know.
I believe it was a beneficial move. I think the Packers have a pretty good idea that there's a couple people on their board that they'll be able to move out of the first round, gather assets, and still have a couple guys that they're really interested in sitting there.
So what did they get for that trade? I mean, it was only like a one or two.
Yeah, since it wasn't a big move, I think they'll probably get a compensatory, I'm not sure the word, fourth, maybe fifth round pick. But to only drop a few spots, that can be pretty good in a deep draft.
Unless they really wanted Watts.
Yeah, I don't think that was the person they were set on. I think they're looking at either a Joe Mixon, a Dalvin Cook, or maybe a DeShone Kizer. I think they're the people they're looking at.
Well, Bill, listen, I think it's pretty amazing to know this much about the draft. You must have to really follow college football.
It's funny you say that, actually. I'm not a big college football guy. I keep up with it. I watch the big games. I keep up with the big players. You know, many of these guys are household names, the Deshaun Watsons, the Miles Garretts. But some aren't. It's really just, you know, NFL goes all out on this draft coverage, and it's really been for 2 months nonstop. It's nonstop coverage. These guys, you know, you hear their names every day. You learn everything about who they are as players, who they are as people. And it just gets driven in enough that you learn and you really find out who these guys are without even ever really watching some of them.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you say that. I'm not a huge college football fan, although I do follow my own university, Temple. And every now and then I'll sit down and watch a game late on a Saturday afternoon. And it was interesting to think about the Eagles' pick. In their first round, they took Derek Barnett, as you mentioned, the defensive end. And I was surprised to learn that he broke Reggie White's record at Tennessee for sacks.
Really?
Wow, that's something.
Really?
That resulted in loss of yardage. Reggie White, who was, you know, was a great Eagle, a great Packer.
Yeah.
And
great person, great player.
Yeah.
Wonderful person.
Great leader.
I really wish I had met. He's one of the few football players I regret not meeting. Held the record for sacks and tackles for losses at Tennessee. And Derek Barnett exceeded that. And when was Reggie White at Tennessee? 1990?
Oh, it had to be.
No, it would have been probably 86.
Yeah,
so. Mid to late 80s.
Late 80s, early 90s.
I mean, he was in Philadelphia for how many years before
he went
to the Packers?
He was an Eagle for 8 or 10 years, I think.
And then he went to the Packers and played
Bowl. Yeah, I think he came into the Eagles around 87 or 88 and played there until 96, 95.
Well, when was the first, the first free agency?
Well, he left Philadelphia in 94, I believe. So, yeah, he had a good long career. I mean, that's really something. That's a heck of a stat. I'm happy you turned me on to that. That really is something, because Reggie White absolutely is the measuring stick when it comes to being a defensive pass rusher.
Yep. Well, one of the things that was interesting to me is how some of the teams with a higher – scooch over here a little bit, don't we?
Yeah, we have some of the teams that drafted pretty low down, or second round, but I invited as our special guest today Tommy Devlin because we're talking draft.
Yes, that's true.
Well,
nice to see you, Tom.
Here, so John, have the Giants there.
Well, as I understand, the Packers are on the clock right now, but
yes,
having said that,
they started already?
Well, they're on the clock.
Oh,
they're technically on the clock.
Yeah, they've been on the clock since the draft.
What time
does it start to?
7, 8?
Yeah, I think the coverage starts at 7, so probably, 7:30, 8 o'clock, we'd expect the first pick to be coming
down.
Yeah,
we sat there last night to watch the Packers, and then at the last minute,
they traded out of the first round, which a lot of teams were doing. And to answer Bill's question, how the Giants do, well, the good news is they got a very good pick. They got what's arguably the second best tight end in the draft. The problem is the guy they really wanted was O.J. Howard, who I guess is a little bit better of a tight end, or potentially is a bigger upside. The problem is to move up 5 spots to get him probably would have cost him 2 more picks, because look at what the stupid Bears did to move up 1 position.
Kings ransom.
They gave pay to King. I mean, if this kid doesn't pay, are you kidding? Another reason aside from overpaying that you wouldn't make that move is look at the pressure that's now on this kid to be the quarterback in Chicago and, you know, bail them out of 30 years of mediocrity. I mean, if this kid doesn't perform, it's going to be awful. But
Tommy doesn't believe that
He won't be playing yet, but I completely agree.
Now, supposedly they signed somebody. But you know, probably by the 9th or 10th game, he'll be in there.
That's what we were talking about. It happens too often where the pressure of this sexy first round pick, everybody looking at him, everybody wants to see him play. It can be hard, you know, to avoid that.
Do you really think that Tubetsky is going to get any playing time late in the season?
I don't.
Truthfully, unless Glennon really struggles to put together wins and
even before that, Tommy, what are the Bears going to do? They're not going to be competitive. I think you're looking at let's say they're 6-6. 5-7. You're going nowhere. You're in a division behind the Packers. Why wouldn't you throw the kid in at some point? I know where Tommy was going with, and I agree with his analysis. But just as effective, or just as important a point is, where are you going with this thing? Because a year from now, you want him to be your starter. So
well, but remember, the Bears have seen what the Packers did with Aaron Rodgers, so. I'm not so sure that.
Yeah, different situation though. You had a Favre where he wasn't going to give up the position and you couldn't do much about it. Number one, number two, he was still playing at a high level. I mean, Rodgers didn't sit on the bench because they wanted to give him seasoning. Rodgers was on the bench because Favre wasn't done yet.
You're right. John is always right.
Now, well, it is true. In conventional wisdom, you look at recently these guys who get drafted high, they don't sit for long. You look at Jared Goff. Jeff Fisher came out and said he wanted to give him as much time as he needed. After 7 games, he was out there. He wasn't ready. Usually, pressure.
Well, there was this pressure. I think public pressure.
Yeah, from the, whether it's from
plus,
the
you looked at how good Wentz was doing, and he was a second, and all of that contributed.
Yeah,
to
whether
it.
It's pressure from the organization, from the fan base, it becomes too much usually at a point.
Yes.
It kind of feels funny. It's 80 degrees outside and we're talking football, but let's keep on it.
So, Bill, how do you think the Eagles made out? I think they, in my opinion, they were similar to the Giants in that they didn't make a move. They were thinking about it, but again, I think the theme of this year's draft, and that's why it's shocking, Tom, that 3 quarterbacks got taken. Nobody thought a quarterback was going to take it, and yet teams are moving up. Cleveland come out looking pretty smart for a change.
Oh, yes.
But how do you think the Eagles sat like the Giants did? Did not get creative. Did not try to get more picks later on. What do you think about the guy they took?
I think they played it conservative and they played it smart. They bolstered their defense. They took a defensive end.
Yes.
Arguably the best one in the draft.
Right. Lots of people and you know,
I think he's going to be a great player.
I think so. And remember, the Eagles are in the toughest division right now with the Dallas and the Giants.
Absolutely.
And the Redskins. And also, they're in the toughest conference. And if you look at their schedule, for a team that did not play well in the whole second half of the season, they still have drawn a bunch of pretty tough opponents.
Well, when you're to your point, Bill, when you're in the NFC East, you're automatically going to have 6 tough games against the division opponents.
Yeah,
there's no gimmies like in the Central Division.
It's sort of like the bizarro AFC East.
But
more importantly,
or the AFC East, correct.
More importantly, the Eagles made a smart move building defense first. Defense is going to win them football games. They've got their quarterback of the future. They've got to find ways to keep them on the field. And the more they bolster their defense with draft choices like they just made for the first round, I think the more you're going to see Carson Wentz on the field.
You know, I was surprised. I thought that this was a draft of the cornerbacks.
And no, everybody said the quarterback was a weak draft,
cornerback.
Yes.
Cornerback.
No question about that.
That's right.
Corner was a very. There were actually some pretty high cornerbacks taken. Marshawn Lattimore amongst them. Tre'Davious White ended up going in the 20s. I think they were the position you heard a lot about leading up to it. But once those quarterbacks started flying off the board, Trubisky at 2, teams panicked and teams had to move up. That's why you see all three.
I agree with you. I think that's why the Chiefs moved. I think that's why a lot of them moved up because they saw what was happening. I agree with you there.
And they want to make the move. They don't want to lose their guys. So you can see all three teams that actually selected a quarterback moved up to select said quarterback. Okay. So I think that really threw the board in a lot of flux early on. That's why you saw some very talented guys in the 20s. And beyond there, there are still some very talented guys on the board.
Well, they say the second and third round is very deep. This is where it's going to make or break your draft. And both Jerry Reese in New York and, or I should say in New Jersey, and the Brain Trust in Philadelphia are both looking to make great value picks in that second or third round.
I agree with that completely, John. With the Eagles, the focus has been on defense in the first round. The second round and third round, which I think start this evening around 7 o'clock. I think they're going to be looking for a good wide receiver and also a good tight end because there are just so many years they're going to get out of a Brett Celek. Frankly, I think the receiving core for the Eagles was a weakness last year.
Glaring weakness.
Tommy, what do you think?
Yeah, I think the focus of day two early on, and like you said, wide receiver is a good possibility. I think they're going to make their move on a corner, which is really a position they were lacking at last year. And they have next to no depth at it. They don't have any single guy you can look at and say, that's our starting corner. They have some young guys. They have some journeymen. So I look out, we got a guy from Washington named Kevin King. He's a big, tall, long guy. He's the kind of guy you want out there. He can cover the number one receivers in that NFC East, which is full of just unbelievable weapons, whether it's the Giants with Beckham Jr., Brandon Marshall, Shepard, and then you got the Cowboys, Bryant, Beasley, Redskins. They brought in Terrell Pryor. I mean, you got to get that guy who can shut down those star receivers, or those teams are going to make you pay for it. Also, watch out for a running back. Dalvin Cook's a possibility, the guy out of Florida State. People are really high on him.
Now, what is the deal with him? Does he have character issues?
That's what
field?
It is. I haven't heard much about him. You know, you've heard more about the Reuben Fosters when it comes to the character stuff, but apparently he has some stuff. I heard he had his meetings, you know, his one-on-one meetings didn't go so great with some teams, which can tend to scare people. But I think he's going to be one of the first guys off the board in that second round, possibly even the Packers at number 33 taking him.
There was a lot of talk about the Packers making that their pick. Again, the Packers are a character team, and they're struggling with that. You get teams, the old guard teams like the Giants, the Packers, you know, even the Bears to some extent. I mean, the old guard kind of teams, I think that runs deep.
Yeah.
That character stuff runs deep. And, you know, I know the Bears have made a lot of mistakes over the decades. They really haven't been relevant. But the one thing you will say is I think they have done well with their character picks, and they, you know, unfortunately they've had some bad breaks. And in fact, it's a team where had things swung a little bit differently, I think Chicago could have won a lot more games and maybe grabbed another Super Bowl somewhere along the line because they've had some decent teams over the years.
For years they've been a team that's gotten close.
They've gotten close, and I think some of that is the character. I think if you subscribe to that, like I think that the Steelers, the Giants, the Packers are three old teams that certainly come to mind. There are others, but those certainly come to mind. You got to be real careful, and they got to satisfy themselves with that. If they draft this guy, that he comes to a small market like Green Bay, and then he's going to be controllable. I mean, you know, he's going to play well. I mean,
absolutely. Okay? That's the one thing. But he's definitely going to come.
He's going to poison the locker room. You can't afford to do that.
Well, you know, the interesting thing, though, depending on what the character flaw is, I think some of these guys would be better off in a place like Green Bay.
I've heard
I
that echoed.
Really,
that's a fair point, Pat.
Yeah, I've actually heard that echoed by some big people because, you know, another guy on their board possibly is Joe Mixon, the running back out of Oklahoma. He's the one who's mired in controversy. You know, obviously, I don't want to get my own opinions brought into it. You know, he struck a woman on video. He broke her jaw. I'm one of those people, I draw the line, I don't draw it in pencil, I draw it in Sharpie right there. I don't want him on my team. You know, certain teams
that was pretty egregious.
That's, you know, certain things I can forgive. That in mind, that's not one of them. But if the Packers feel he's a guy who they can come in, like you said, maybe in a smaller market, you don't have the New York or Philadelphia or L.A. people prodding at him, maybe he'll work out, maybe he'll be tremendous. But like John said, you don't want to poison the locker room. You want to keep that. That's where you need integrity. That's
but if the locker room, if you can work the locker room, a place like Green Bay, you know, the people will keep him in line. And the people in Green Bay, remember, these guys live in a small town. They go to the Walmart. They go everywhere. And people are very respectful, but it is totally different. I mean, I could walk in New York and Philadelphia and probably walk by how many of these players and not even recognize them. In Green Bay, that won't happen.
I think that's a fair point. Before we cut to a break, Bill, what about the Jets pick at number 6? I think they actually did well. What do you think?
Surprisingly, the Jets did not make a mistake this year. The Jets have routinely made poor draft choices. I think their last good draft pick was Christian Hardenberg, who has been sitting on the bench, and he's probably their quarterback of the future. But at number 6, they took a safety. They made some sense. Again, this is a weak team in a weak division except for New England. They need to win some of their division games. I think a safety who has height and reach and speed is what this guy's going to develop into. The real trick for Gangrene is really going to be some of the free agents that they're going to put around him on defense. And that's yet something that needs to be seen, because generally the Jets' first and second round draft picks have not been good. So this could be a pleasant surprise. I'm going to have to sit back and wait.
What do you think, Tom?
Yeah, I was just going to come in and say that I thought it was a tremendous pick for the Jets. Jamal Adams, for him to fall there, a lot of guys, he was on a lot of boards going number 2 or 3. But like we brought up earlier, those quarterbacks go, and he was able to fall to them. If I was the Jets, I'd be very happy to get a guy like him. Yeah. Definitely, he can come in and be a difference maker right away.
The real question is, will he get the right coaching? Will he be surrounded with the right teammates?
Like you said, you've got to put the pieces around him. One guy can't do it alone.
And remember, the Jets have an almost toxic atmosphere in the locker room. Ever since the last 2 years, seeing Nick Mangold retire, I think didn't help. It made things worse, because he was a stabilizing kind of character guy. So we've got a lot to, the Jets have a lot to prove, and they're in a division where they're probably on a parity with everyone except the Patriots, who, as we know, are the Super Bowl champs, and we can't hold a candle to
the perennial contender of that division.
Yeah.
So, Tommy, or any of you guys, who do you think the Packers could pick to replace T.J. Lang? You know, I mean, the Packers have lost some good players.
Well, depending on where they're willing to make the move, there are some really good linemen left. I know there's this Cam Robinson out of Alabama. A lot of people had him as a first-round pick. He ended up sliding. He's definitely one you could see. I know it wasn't a great year for linemen. Usually you see the linemen. Actually, it was the first NFL draft ever, I'll give you the tidbit, to not have a lineman be taken in the first 19. Was there one in the first, or only one in the first 19 picks? Something like that. So it was a pretty thin year, honestly. You saw Garrett Bowles go, and you saw Ryan Ramczyk. So it wasn't a great year for linemen. I don't know if it's the year you address and get the real replacement for him just yet.
Okay. So, who do you think the top second round guys are?
Well, I think the Eagles are going to once again go for cornerbacks. There's a guy at Florida State. I'll look up his name in a minute.
Ask Tommy. He probably knows.
I know you're talking about.
Yeah.
The name's escaping me right
Jazz
now.
Jazz or Jez Cobb.
And I know there's the
Goodrich.
Keep all the names straight. There's so many names flying around.
It's hard to keep them all straight, to be very honest.
I can't even keep
a good focus on second round picks for the Eagles will be on defensive backs and safeties and cornerbacks. As we said a few minutes ago, and I think John is correct in his observation, this is a cornerback-rich draft. And the Eagles had tremendous trouble at cornerback last year. Tommy?
Yeah, no, I was going to say, it really is the position you have to address, because I said it before, you can't sit another year with glaring issues there and pretending it's not happening, because those receivers are going to eat you up. So I think you go and you maybe address a Jalen Tabor, Tease Tabor, they call him, one of these guys who could just add depth and come in and play, because you don't want to have a revolving door of these veterans who come in, they play for a year, they do their part, maybe they do something, maybe they don't, and they're out. And you have to create a system where these players can be nurtured and grow into the players they need to become, specifically at corner. Yeah.
I think that Eagles go with Tease Tabor, if he's still around, at the second round, or Sidney Jones out of Washington, another quarterback.
Sidney Jones is an interesting one, because he was very high in people's draft board originally, and he, I believe, tore his Achilles during the combine workout. So, yeah, he'd definitely be a smart one, because there's a lot of value there with a guy like him in the second round.
So do you think anybody really in the combine really you know, someone you wouldn't have expected, but after the combine has really moved up?
Oh, there are always combine warriors. I mean, I can't think of as many of people who moved up, but we just had one mentioned that Tease Tabor actually plummeted in the draft due to his combine. He ran a very slow 40, which turned some heads. It didn't really turn my head, because I don't buy into that stuff as much. I like to watch the guy play and make a decision. He looks like a ball player. I mean, you see it. He can go out there. He can cover the number one guy. I've heard some people say he might have to be regulated to a slot corner in the NFL due to the lack of speed. But, you know, the combine, it makes some guys draft and it breaks some guys draft. You see it every year.
But why is the 40, and maybe one of you can explain, why is that so important in light of the fact that they're just running in a straight line? And granted, some of them are a lot faster, but, you know, you get out in a football field, and not a lot of opportunity often to run in a straight line. That's at least my view.
I think it's just to give you more of an idea of their raw talent, their raw intangibles when it comes to just being an athlete. It gives you an idea of what they really are, you know. It gives you an idea of what they're going to be able to do when they get out there. You see, the 40, for wide receivers, I mean, it's huge. You want to know if that guy can go from how quick he can get from point A to point B.
It's called yards after the catch.
Yeah, all that stuff.
But I think, really, for the average player, you're right. You don't see too many 40-yard bursts. But I think the 40, as opposed to the 100, is more relevant and has been for decades, which is why they've used the 40 as the measure, is because, you know, quite simply, on a football field, it's usually 40 yards or less. You don't see players breaking it too much from inside their own 20.
No.
No, but I think people who can move, I mean, it's
well,
just
but the point of it,
not
here's the other
straight,
point. I understand. I'm trying to answer that. Okay. The point is that to have a really quick time in the 40, you need to explode out of the blocks. And if you can explode that way, it means you have that ability to cut zig and zag. Because if you don't have a big first step, you're not going to have a good 40 time. Most guys who have a really good 40 time can make that skill translates into a zig and a zag.
Well, you know, you make
a
good point.
As opposed to, in other words, you would want the top 40 guy more than you would want the top 100 guy. Because the top 100 guy means the last
40
yards
he can sprint.
But it's
the first 40
yards.
What occurs to me. What occurs to me is this. Anybody can run fast if they get a good enough head start. The real talent that you can't teach and you can't coach or show technique for is how quickly can you get up to speed from that four-point stance or a three-point stance. If you have that kind of explosive speed, and I don't think it's 40 yards, although that's the measurement, I think it's the first 10 or 15 yards.
Yeah, the first couple of steps, for sure.
Exactly.
But the one way to kind of measure that, I mean, otherwise you're down to a 20-yard dash. I mean, the whole point of the 40 is it factors in that big first step, as you just said.
If you watch some of these guys in the combines, you'll see that they may run the 40 in a 4.6, which isn't good, or a 4.7 or a 4.8, which means to the
That's
average
right. good
scout,
for
you're,
lineman,
like,
but
you're,
days,
you're not really
that was a,
draft
that was a
material.
Wide receiver speed 30 years ago, right. But it shows you what PEDs will do for
but
you.
But remember, these guys are bigger, they're stronger, and I think the real test is how quickly and how explosively they make it through the first 15 yards. Because I think football's a 15-yard game.
Isn't a 20-yard? I mean, I agree with John from the standpoint, if you really want to see how fast someone is, show me 20 yards, not 40. Because some of them will be able to catch up if they have 40 yards.
The first 10 yards is really the explosion looking
right.
for.
It's where they make their hay. It's where it really shows. You see that's really where it happens. But 20 would be too short, I feel like.
Yeah.
It's like you said, 40 is a good in-between. Not the 100, because you don't see 100-yard plays. 40 is like a big chunk play. It gives you an idea of how they can move on something like that.
And remember something also. For teams like the Eagles, who've had trouble in their defensive backfield, people with the height, with the size, who can stay with a receiver, whether they're exploding forward or in reverse, are really what you need to look for. Remember that it's very easy to overrun and pass the guy you're supposed to cover. We see that all the time when somebody makes a mistake in the backfield. It's a whole lot harder to recover from that and reverse, especially when you're a younger player and you haven't had the experience of playing against a pro offense.
Well, here's the thing. You now have a passing league. If your secondary can't cover, you're in big trouble.
Right.
And it's as simple as that.
No question.
I mean, your point about forward reverse, that's true. But you need one shutdown cover, corner, and you need some other guys who are mobile. Because if your secondary isn't going to roll up these guys, it's a passing league. They're going to go right past you. And really, what is the Giants game, okay? Well, they just want to spring Beckham once or twice a game. There's 14 points. And now you got a Shepherd. Now you got a tight end. And that's why, I mean, they're salivating at putting this playbook together now. Because this tight end is supposed to be very quick. Not a great blocker, although that can be taught. His technique can be improved. What they're looking for is the deep seam pattern, which is Eli's favorite ball.
Now I agree.
And that, you know who is great with that and who made a living on that short period of time?
Jeremy Shockey.
Well, Shockey, yes, and that was the model for it exactly. But then they come up with a small little wide receiver from Massachusetts who wound up burning everybody on those routes. And they really, as great as Beckham is, he's not really as team. He's a go receiver.
Yeah, you tell him to run the straight line, go down.
Two or three times a game, you get him against the secondary who can't cover. And he may break it for six, or he's going to at least get a huge chunk. And that's really what you're looking for in the passing game now. I mean, the Patriots really kind of branded, they kind of changed the game with that passing game, with the big tight end who can rip off 30 yards, 40 yards. Name me one great Patriots wide receiver in the last 5 years that won two Super Bowls.
Yeah,
who?
Happen.
Who? Okay? It's the combination of the seam route and the big tight end. And the scat back, the H-back, or the split out. And that's what this guy hopefully can do for the Giants.
Well, no, when you get a guy like him, especially like you said, his speed, he's almost more of a wide receiver in a lot of ways. But, he has those tight end features.
They say he's about the same size as Brandon Marshall, a wide receiver.
Wow.
Well, this guy, they're saying his versatility is huge, which is why in the Giants' mind, it wasn't worth spending two more draft picks to move up and get Howard.
Because they say
this guy might be a better seam route runner.
And it's not like there wasn't a huge discrepancy in talent, like you said.
Exactly. It just wasn't worth the premium.
Yeah. And like you said, a guy like him, you already have these great wide receivers out there the teams have to account for. Now you have that tight end. Now that safety can't take a down off. He has to be on him every time. Because if he's not, he's going to get behind you and he's going to make you pay.
Okay, guys, we're going to take a short break for some words from our sponsors, and then we'll be back.
At Crown Trophy of Flemington, we have thousands of products for you to choose from. Whether you're looking for trophies, plaques, or corporate awards, Crown Trophy of Flemington is your one-stop shop. We feature acrylic and crystal awards and promotional products for any occasion. We build and engrave all awards right on site, and we're a leading supplier of varsity jackets for local sports teams. We provide quality customer service and great pricing. Crown Trophy of Flemington is conveniently located in the Staples Shopping Center in Flemington. Crown Trophy of Flemington, we're trophies and a whole lot more.
Pambi's Purely Delicious Ice Creamery wants to help you raise money for your local fire company. In honor of International Firefighter Day, Pambi's will be holding a two-week fundraiser beginning May 2nd. Pambi's will donate 25% of your purchase price to your designated fire company. Simply download the flyer from the Pambi's website and bring it to Pambi's, located on Route 31 just north of Payne Road. Pambi's will also donate 25% of your purchase of Pambi's products at ShopRite. They have flyers there too. Honor the men and women who would risk their life to save yours. Pambi's, purely delicious.
This is Tony Clark, Para Planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Hi, I'm Joe Peters of Weichert Realtors. Buying or selling a property can be one of the most expensive undertakings you face in your lifetime, and selecting the right realtor to help you through this process can dramatically affect your success or your failure. I have personally helped hundreds of buyers and sellers through this process in achieving their dreams and goals in 100 in Somerset County areas over the past 10 years. I believe that this experience should be a smooth, seamless one for you and not a roller coaster ride. But the best judgment as to whether or not I deliver this to my customers is their reactions in their own words.
One of the things we liked about Joe was that he would return calls within minutes if he wasn't able to pick up.
You know, Joe guided us through the process of selling our home and made a complicated transaction appear seamless.
How do I accomplish this? By approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, I try to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them my own. Then, I go out and take the mass amounts of data that we have and distill them down to a few understandable action points to be considered. Finally, I control the entire process through technology to ensure that we're not going to hit any speed bumps along the way. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let me show you how to take my level of professional expertise and put it to work for you in achieving your real estate goals and dreams. I can be reached at 908-238-0118. Thanks for your time.
Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntingChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunterdon Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with
you're listening to HuntingChamberRadio.com. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce is proud to present HuntingChamberRadio.com. All business, all talk, all community. Bringing you local news, information, events, and informative programming. Proudly serving the businesses and residents of Hunterdon County, New Jersey.
All right, we're back, and I know Bill is going to have to leave in a couple of minutes. So, Bill, is there anything special you want to talk about?
Well, I'm sure Bill wants to mention what happened in Boston the last two nights.
You know, it's still early in the season, and remember, you can't win a pennant in April, but you certainly can lose one. Look at the Mets and the start they got off to. Look at the Phillies, who've suddenly won seven games in a row. Where are they coming from? The Yankees seem to be gelling as a team.
Girardi is doing a great job. He's a great manager, and he's doing a great job.
He is. And, you know, the Yankees have managed to hit a sweet spot with between experienced pitching, some rookies,
The real problem you have with the Yankees is that they're the opposite. The Red Sox had four starters on injured. The Yankees, they come out of the box strong. We'll see where it is in a month. The real problem with is the pitching depth with the New York rotation. Tanaka turned in one of the best performances of his three-year career. We'll see what he's doing in July. Well, he's a guy that always wears out. So if you're the Yankees, you want to stay far enough up that you're not going to win the division. You're looking for a wild card. So if you can get enough early wins and bank those wins, you might stay in contention and then get lucky in September and get a couple just to stay in the conversation. But they had to get off to a good start because they are not going to have the depth to do it.
Well, remember, depth is a funny thing in baseball. They've got a very good player at Trenton, who may be their next second baseman. They've got some decent pitching.
I think their position players are okay, but I'm talking about the pitching staff.
The pitching. Oh, there's no question. It's going to be mid-July or early August. We're going to see what C.C. Sabathia still has left. We're going to get to that.
He was amazing last year. I still cannot believe that C.C. had the year he did. I thought he was finished.
I thought so, too.
I'm absolutely – he reinvented himself as a finesse. Here's a power pitcher that's – I mean, that's a great job on his part.
Oh, yeah. It's a great job, and he's nibbling at the corners beautifully these days. And Luis Severino seems to have gotten over his – whatever his second-year problem was.
Well, his problem was he couldn't throw inside. He was afraid to throw inside.
Right.
And they've done a lot of work with him. And, you know, it's a funny thing. You know, when we talk in inches, and of course baseball is the proverbial game of inches, but if you've got a pitcher with good stuff who's afraid to come inside, that's a problem. And I think they convinced him, look, you can't give up that part of the plate. You've got to learn how to time those pitches to come in and you know, try to keep it high and tight, low and inside, whatever. You got to keep it out from the middle of the plate, and I think he's improved with that.
Especially to right-hand hitters, and he seemed to handcuff a couple of the White Sox who were batting righty against him. The interesting thing will be tonight and tomorrow night against Baltimore. Baltimore is a good team, and
yeah,
I think
they always play
places.
Well early, and that will be interesting. If the Yankees take two out of three in this series. I'm going to start. I'm not going to say I'm going to believe, but let's put it this way. They take two out of three at home here. That's not a bad position to be in. Going into May, and they take two out of three, they'd probably be in first place. That's not bad.
And remember, the first week of the season, the Yankees struggled against Tampa. They were 1-3. And then they got home, they lost another game, and then they began to wake up. What was impressive to me was they played the Cardinals, a good team, and managed to win that series.
Again, the Cardinals were off to a horrible start.
Yeah.
They played the Blue Jays off to a horrible start. So, I mean, you know, but then again, they came and took two from Boston. And Boston, you might say, as they start to play the better teams, the thing is right now the Red Sox are not a good team. They're not hitting. The pitching, I mean, Sale was unbelievable. I mean, he is a sub-1 ERA in three starts. He's done everything you could. But Porcello has given up some long balls. They've had a number of issues. The team has left so many men on base. They're just not playing well right now. But it's a good young team. They'll be there. Nobody in Boston is panicking at all.
There's no reason to panic. It's only April. Unless, of course, you're the Mets.
Well, the Mets could fall out of the race. I mean, if they get swept this weekend, that's kind of start to put them in a hole that's difficult to climb back. But what's amazing is how this wild card thing has changed everything. When they put that in a few years ago, because quite frankly, to your point, Bill, if let's say they got swept this weekend and they're like eight games back. All right, you got 120 games, 130 games to go. Eight games is a lot to make up.
Especially when you've got injuries
and that. But now with this wild card thing, hey, all you want is to get to that one game and you got a shot.
Well, you have a point, John. The wild card has changed the complexion of the game. And what it does is it keeps people interested longer in the season, particularly when a team gets off to a slow start like the Mets have.
And the same thing really in football when you think about it. I mean, you know, the year that the Giants, your team went down to
9-7,
but they were the sixth seed.
Yep, and it's possible, you know. But
so, Tommy, what do you think? Any idea about my Packers in the second round, not their first?
If I had to say, I think we're going to see the Packers go running back with their first pick here. I think it's going to be Dalvin Cook, Florida State running back. If I had to just go right now, it would be my pick. I'm going to say the Packers are going to go with that. They're going to trust that they can work with him and work with his off-the-field issues, so I think that's the move. And my wild card is that they'd make a move on Deshaun Kizer to be, I don't know if it would be to Aaron Rodgers be his heir apparent, but to be the guy to grow under him.
Yeah, I mean, you are looking at a couple-of-year project with Kizer.
Absolutely. He really is. If you're going to get him there, you need to get him with somebody in front of him who can teach him what it means to be an NFL quarterback. And that doesn't mean rely on your legs. That means you have to get comfortable in the pocket. You need to stand up and be a pocket passer. And that is what Rodgers can hopefully, if he goes there, teach him.
Well, Rodgers, I think, unlike Favre, and I love Favre, but I don't think that he was ever a good mentor. And I think Rodgers could be. On the other hand,
I don't know. Rodgers has some personality issues. I hope you're right. I'm not so sure you are right, though, with that, Pat.
It was a two-way street. I think Brett probably looked at him as a little bit of competition. But like,
oh, no, I'm not even talking about that. I put most of that on Favre for all the reasons Pat alludes to. But no, I'm talking about Rodgers, where he is right now. Yeah, I realize that most of this is family issues, and it's tough to deal with family. And, of course, in our practices, we see the ugly side of it. But I don't know. It just I'm not sure if I were Kizer that Rodgers is the guy I'd want to learn from.
Really? See, now,
you know who I could see, unfortunately, taking a flyer on him? The Belichicks. I could see them taking a flyer on him in the fourth or fifth round and say, we got another Brady. He'll be picked 199 in 3 years from now. Yeah, I could see those guys doing it.
And I wonder, do the Packers feel like they really need a quarterback yet?
I think it's not that they feel they need it yet. I think it's more that they see what they did with Rodgers. They want to have a guy who they build in their system.
I think they have too many needs. Now, if he's hanging around in the sixth or seventh round, which is a distinct possibility, somebody will grab him.
Yeah.
But a team will grab him that doesn't need a quarterback for at least two, probably 3 years, and has a good tutoring, mentoring situation. Perhaps Rodgers is that guy. Certainly Brady is the kind of guy that could do it. Although in New England, you've got Garoppolo.
Yeah.
So, you know, but then again, they're famous for drafting decent talent, letting them shine, dusting them, polishing them up, and then dumping them for a high draft pick. So they could be looking at getting a Kizer just to do that. And say, well, next year we'll brandish him. You know, they'll put him in against Buffalo or something, and the guy will throw a couple of TD passes. Next thing you know, they can say, well, you know, we'll take a first round pick for Kizer. Yeah, I mean, they're very, very good at doing that.
No, people see the New England, they know they've been a part of that system, and that puts their value in teams' eyes up tenfold. For what reason, I don't know. It seems the bell works some of the time. You look at the Matt Castles of the world who, you know, got paid big time after playing.
Absolutely.
Well,
look what happened in Green Bay.
In Green Bay.
And that is an NFL thing, because it happened in Green Bay, it happened in New England, it's happened in other places. Guy has one decent year, he's got a good line in front of him in a running game, and next thing you know, they say, gee, this guy may not be all pro, but he's a solid QB.
Or he comes in when a quarterback is hurt by Rodgers.
What that all comes back around to, and you can circle, and even last night's draft out to it, is the lack of star power quarterbacks in the NFL, besides, you know, the few, you know, the real guys, the Brady's, Breeze, Rodgers. There is such a lack of star power at that position. Teams are so starving for it that they're willing to jump on these guys who really don't have it a lot of the time.
Well, and I think all three of these guys, even the guys the Bears jumped up and took number two, he's a project too. No. That's why I'm saying I just don't understand. Hey, they may prove us all wrong, and we may be sitting here in a year or so saying, wow, what a great move. But, I mean, this wasn't like the Giants moving up to get Eli Manning, who they reasonably could predict was going to win a couple Super Bowls.
Highs in the mid-60s.
Oh, I think we're off.
Thursday, sunny, and highs in the mid-70s. Partly sunny on Friday, a chance of showers.
I guess, guys, we're going to say goodbye. And
partly sunny on the morning.
Say goodnight, Dick.
That's really required.
Goodnight, Tom.
Hey, man, you got to take
a
little bit more seriousness than just taking it for granted. It's the only planet that we live on, and Yeah. We're still trying to figure out where we could possibly go if Earth was not a viable option in the near, in the future. So, you know, celebrate it. Enjoy yourself. Just get out of your comfort zone and go and enjoy and celebrate being on this planet for just one day. That's kind of important. So when Earth Day rolls around again, or other types of events that are similar to Earth Day, please give your effort. Come on by. Check it out. All right. So that's a little bit of vitamin C.
Radio News with Chris Barnes.
The population of Israel stops what it's doing for 2 minutes as a siren wails to remember those killed in the Holocaust.